It's Sunday, which means it's time for Viewpoint Presents with Malcolm and Michael Johns. Each week, we bring you the top global and national news stories presented with facts and top-tier analysis, all from a perspective rooted in America's founding principles. Join us in defending our great nation and American liberty. Now, here's Malcolm and Michael with the week's top stories.
You know, just a couple of weeks ago, we were still trying to figure out this election, this debacle of an election that's, you know, we'll be talking about forever because it's been earth-shattering. Everybody knows it. Everybody in this country, everybody around the world know that this is an election that is going to be discussed. Now, of course, the left and the Democrats right now, they want to change the channel quickly. Of course, they never changed the channel back in the many years of the Trump administration. We understand that. But here's what's brilliant about the move they've just done. Now, think about this. So you have that January 6th event, and now you have all the attention changed and the distraction on the rally and the Capitol incident of what had taken place. And you have all the attention now totally put on Trump and impeachment and 25th Amendment and, oh my golly, what are we going to do? And, you know, that's where the attention is. There's no talk anymore, not before you see Navarro come out with this third part of the Navarro report, which gets into the numbers and facts and stats. And it really reminds us all that there's still a lot more questions here. And as we've said before, they need to be answered. They require answers, no matter how long it takes. And we've been saying that right along, and we're going to continue to say it here. Welcome to Viewpoint Presents. It's Malcolm here, along with Michael Johns. And Michael, you and I were talking about exactly what I say there, that, you know, no matter how long this takes at this point, and listen, the left, they can sit there and change the narrative, and they're really good at that, changing the narrative. And they can do that all day long. But, you know, these things are going to require answers. They're going to need answers. And even if it happens after the fact, like you said, it may be unprecedented and certainly historical in nature. But when that does come out, and we have it now, but there seems to be no way to get this to the attention of what needs to happen because they are hell-bent on Biden, of course. So here we go, Michael. What do you think?
Good to be back with you, Malcolm. Yeah, I take a little issue with that. I think if you look at the history of Democrat Party and far left scandals of the last decade, you'd have to say that most of them have not been answered. We have no answers or accountability on Obamagate, no answers or accountability on Benghazi, no answers or accountability on the IRS targeting of the Tea Party movement. No answers or accountability on this election, not even much of a consensus in the Republican Party or in the conservative movement that this is a scandal worthy of seriousness. I think we've shown that they have been able to pull off some extraordinary, oftentimes glaringly illegal steps that have been politically beneficial to them without a movement or a commitment on our side toward holding them accountable for it. And that should be pretty terrifying, pointing to two conclusions. One, that they've got to feel emboldened and empowered at this point. And two, if we hope to have anything short of a one-party state in this country, we got to start doing some things very differently.
Well, yeah, because that's the future of, that's a Venezuela model right there, where you kill the other political party and you seize control. And that's the warning sign. And in fact, let me tell you all out there, Michael and I are going to talk much more about the future of the Republican Party a little later in the program. And this is an important piece we really do need to talk about. And it's the perfect, Michael's perfect one to talk about on this when we talk about what's going to happen. And as we addressed up front in the earlier hour, it's important to tell you that you're not going to be able to start all two, three, four different parties and succeed and win. So there's a lot to that story we need to talk about. But Michael, this whole narrative change now, here's the thing. They are so smart on the left that way. Like you just pointed out a whole bunch of things. And of course, you add that to all, add to all of that, no indictments, the Hillary Clinton business, the uranium deal. John Durham, of course, you know, all of that is out there in the wings. None of that's been answered. And you see what they do that should not be lost on anybody is they change the narrative quickly. They change the subject and they are so good at this. And they just did it again with the Capitol Hill, which we have enough evidence to show that they all knew this was happening in advance. Nothing was a surprise, which is why the mayor there, Muriel Bowser, had everybody stand down and why they invited them in, because it's an event they seem to want to have happen as the people rise like an overflowing river to take it back. But that's the thing I think a lot of people have lost sight on, Michael, is that they do this brilliantly. Now, are you seeing as much as I'm seeing on this point, buddy?
Well, I think you mentioned one of obviously the most recent, but also one of the best examples of them being able to do that, meaning the last week should have been dedicated toward a discussion of the 5,000 affidavits and the monstrous process violations and fraudulent nature of the 2020 presidential election and what we're going to do about it and who, if anyone, cares about it at this point. And instead, we talked about, you know, really, let's face it, a kind of bizarre, dangerous, ill-advised storming of the Capitol that accomplished nothing in the way of holding anyone accountable for any of these election violations. And as you correctly point out, did succeed in changing the subject. Who was responsible? Well, we don't really entirely know yet. What should the federal investigators do about it? Well, they've arrested some people. A few of them seem to be some Trump supporters. A few others seem to be Antifa, BLM activists. What were they up to? And, you know, all of it gets to serves the ultimate point of distracting us from what I have felt since early November should be the singular focus of this country, which is what happened in this election and what are we going to do about it? I mean, even the things, Malcolm, on which there's no disagreement, like let's take, like, say, Wisconsin, where poll ballot collection boxes were illegally put up. Let's even assume that people put them up not knowing what the law was and they just thought they'd be helpful in the middle of the pandemic. There's no effort to go back, hold people accountable, question people about what they were up to. In this case, turns out, hey, guess what? They weren't even paid for by the state of Wisconsin, which of course wouldn't have paid for because it was illegal. They were paid for with private funds. Inquire with the private entities responsible about what they thought they were doing. Did they know what they were doing was illegal or not? Is there a fine? Is there any formal notice, any warning? Is there any accountability whatsoever for any and all of these acts? We're all over the place. Apparently not. I mean, it just seems to me that when I look at issues that I've championed and advocated for in, you know, decades now of political involvement, I don't think I've stumbled upon one that is more glaringly serious and which, quite honestly, I have felt more ineffective on. I think people have just not woken up to this reality of what has transpired here. And the institutions, as you and I have discussed, that we relied upon to hold, accountable, all of those individuals responsible for a fair election have not risen to the moment. And maybe this is just too big for this country to tackle. I don't know. Maybe it's too big of a recognition for many Americans, including those who are, you know, really adamantly pro-America and pro, you know, believe in the country's greatness, and including those who just wish its imminent demise. Maybe the common theme throughout all of it is the recognition that we just had a immensely fraudulent presidential election and may indeed be electing a man who did not legitimately win this election is too big of a deal for us to even comprehend or tackle.
I want to just stay January 6th, the storming of the Capitol a moment here. And I want to share something with you here. You know, we've seen a lot of videos come from that day and a lot of information. I mean, sure, I get it. And I'm getting them in here by the truckloads. But I got one in particular I watched, which was a total, it was about 40 minutes. It was the total storming of the Capitol, everything that happened from the bird's eye view of the protesters. And it was, it's carried on from the lawn all the way through into the Capitol and the shooting of that woman that happened there, that whole scene. It was right on the camera. This was all firsthand knowledge as the camera was running that 40 minutes. And it was called Shooting and Storming of the U.S. Capitol in Washington, D.C. Viewer discretion is advised. And I understand why. And I watched it to see, because it was a firsthand account. Like if you were on the ground watching it, this would be the one you'd watch. But I did it to understand the human emotion. I wanted to understand the psychology and the human emotion on the ground there. I don't want to rely on news reports because they all lie like hell. You can't trust anybody in the news business anymore. And I wanted to see what transpired, because I know what happened and I know I have a lot of evidence, but what were they really saying? And I discovered the hype. And it was like an overflowing river, number one. You could sense that. And people were like juiced. And of course, the language in this 40-minute piece is clearly over the top. I mean, people were like it was a drug. And Michael, it was like this right. feeling. It was like this feeling that they felt, they sensed the people now, the people. There was this sense that they were now going after the establishment, the political powers, the government, big government, Uncle Sam. And they were trying to go right after that part of it. That's what this was about. And they were tired of being, the feeling I got from it, they were tired of being bamboozled and lied to and screwed over and bulldozed. And they were tired of it. And all that happened there. And I got thinking back, Michael, to 1861 to 1865, the Civil War. At that point, we were against each other. I mean, the North and South, we were at each other's throats here in the country. It was a different sort of war. It was a different sort of point. But now you don't hear that anymore. Now you hear it's a different war we're talking about. It's a different confrontation, I guess, is what I'm saying, because it is a war. But it's really Americans like these people who are so fed up in being bamboozled, and they're now attacking the establishment. So now it's the people against the establishment, Michael. It's not the people against the people. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, a whole bunch of what you said makes sense. It raises some questions, too. I think, this might be the first modern crime where the participants in it just sort of boldly filmed their criminal violations, apparently with no regard or even recognition to the fact that what they were doing was, in fact, illegal. And one of the questions that arises when you look at January 6th, which I think is going to it's already been a subject of speculation, and it's going to be an issue of considerable investigation, is what were the motives of the people who participated? And, you know, I'm speculating here completely, but why not? I think when I look at it and try to guess what they were, I think I saw a hybrid of motives. I saw some individuals strolling in there like a typical visitor of the Capitol would have done when I worked there, when you would see them walk in and they'd, you know, their camera hanging around their neck and, you know, their maps and sort of looking at it with amazement at the artwork and the architecture. I saw a lot of those people who were like, wow, I guess we could come in. They opened the doors for us even. I'll come in. And then you did also see some people that had immensely violent inclinations, you know, who were prepared to brawl and even proactively brawl with Capitol Police, and then who ultimately tried to break down glass barriers that would allow them entry into the Senate lobby where members of Congress were gathering. And so what was really going on? Yeah, I do think they probably felt they were part of something historic. And I do think they probably were falsely under some illusion that you can storm a government building like that with any degree of success, and either physically from the standpoint of storming and occupying, or politically from the standpoint of advancing your message. And in this case, in both cases, I mean, predictably, it's failure. It's not the way to change policy in 2021 in America. I mean, there's not going to be, let me go further than that. However strongly you feel, whatever position you're on, if you're in Antifa or BLM, or if you're some militant person on the right, which FBI says exists. I never seem to encounter these people too seriously. No change is going to be brought about militarily because this government is too strong. It's too strong militarily. It's too focused. It's well trained to handle these issues. So stop, don't think in those terms. You're going to have to, and there's plenty of precedent for believing that you can address these issues in a legal and civil way. And sad, really, that we have to even issue that reminder in 2021 to people. And I think it's a sign, as you say, that they've lost hope in the institutions that were developed for the purposes of addressing these issues. So if the logical response was, hey, I saw fraud in this election, all right, can I go to the courts? No, they won't hear my own petition because they say I'm not a legal entity. I don't have standing in their eyes. Can I go to my state legislature? Well, my state legislature has some interest in it, but the governor won't allow the session to be called because he or she has a political interest in seeing Biden prevail. Can I go to the Congress and get them to address this? Well, not really. Even the vice president, would he see these points and do something about it? No, he doesn't feel sufficiently empowered to do anything about it. And I think in the eyes of those people, plus the fact that the growing evidence suggests some others were just probably far left agitators who saw it as an opportunity to develop a distraction and to depict Trump supporters as violent when they're not. That was essentially the lesson of what went on that day was, can't leave people in this country feeling that they have no options.
Well, there's a complete assault on the American public right now with the consolidation of political media, big tech, and all of it. And let's face it, those people that you're talking about that stormed there, many of them were very much innocents. And it, actually, the way you described it was solid, absolutely solid, because you're right. The media tries to paint this as a picture right now, like all these mean Trump supporters and they're criminal and evil, and they were so destructive and they were trying to do X, Y, and Z. And yet that's not the truth. The truth was what you just said when you started to talk and you said, well, I'm going to speculate on this. But actually yours is very correct what you said, because when I watched that 40-minute video of the actual season installment of what had taken place there, from the ground, up the stairs, the pushback of all of it, into the chamber, to the lady being shot through the door, all of that happening. The one thing I can tell you is everybody had different reasons for being there. You're so correct when you say that. They all had different reasons. And one of the narratives I heard multiple times in that video, and others, by the way, is people were saying this. They were like, oh my God, I can't believe this. Oh my God, we're in the Capitol. Oh my God, Rick, can you believe this? And like, they're going like, this is historic. Yeah. This is like, and then I heard people on the back say, oh my God, we're part of history. Oh my God, we're part of history. Oh, this is historical. And like, this is what's happening. The juice is flowing. It's like, oh my God, this is history. We got it. Can you believe we're in the chamber, Fred? All right, great, let's do it then. And this is what's going on. And they're storming the Capitol and they're jumping in. It's like, wow, we did it. And it's like, what the hell did they do? You know, what did they do? Where are they?
Yeah, very, very short-sighted. I mean, obviously, many have pointed out, and the Capitol should have been better protected.
when you want it stormed, you don't protect it, though, Michael. Come on.
We've fallen so far, Malcolm, that I have to state like the most obvious things and hope that people like can just sort of acknowledge these as facts. But the Capitol is obviously it's the centerpiece of legislative activity at a very critical moment, knowing that you've got controversy all over the place. And I don't know, 400,000 or 500,000 people in the city, down the street, basically, who are filled with anger and rage. And a president who, rough-edged as he may be, had validated their rage. You know, it just seems to me that you don't open the door at that moment. You have got to, as flawed as this process is, you have to protect the legislators and you have to protect the building. And of course, there's been a firing of the head of the Capitol Police, a lot of others that have been terminated, and lots of arrests and ongoing investigations in this. And, I look at it and I was 50-50 on my participation in this and my opportunity to speak. And I'm you know, just glad I didn't have a good feeling about it from the beginning. You can validate that because you were one of the few people that I mentioned to about it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, when I say I didn't have a good feeling about it, I had a good feeling that I didn't think the message would be properly communicated or the event would be properly organized. Mm-hmm. I had no idea that it did turn out to be a historic event in all the ways that they didn't anticipate. It was a historically flawed event. And the one thing I would add is that this isn't just an issue of seizing the narrative, which appears to have been successful at what they've been successful at, but it's also an issue in how the millions of Make America Great Again activists across this country are ultimately viewed and depicted. We now confront a very serious effort, you know, and I see Biden administration probably diving right into this, of designating their political opponents domestic terrorists. No evidence of that, of course, no basis to feel that way. In fact, you could write books about how the grassroots conservative Tea Party and MAGA movements have been one of the first and few examples of peaceful opposition in masses to outrageous political conditions, but that's where they're going with all this. It's not simply their successful ability to rebrand their political opponents as they've been doing for a long time with all sorts of allegations that aren't true, but now ultimately are they able to even designate them as such? So all of a sudden, you know, if we're talking and you're someone who, you know, feels passionately about these issues, has legitimate points to make, is persuading others to get involved and address them, that's one thing. But now all of a sudden, if you're talking and you're part of a segment that the U.S. government deems to be violent or a domestic terrorist group, you know, you're on the fringe and you're irrelevant. And we can't allow that to happen because I'm going to be arguing in the weeks to come that this administration had all the right ideas and operationalized them with really horrific ineffectiveness because they didn't have the right people involved. And yet the biggest success was their ability to mobilize, and this president's individual ability to mobilize mass people almost wherever he went in support of his agenda. We have not had that in modern times, if ever. Mm-hmm. You know, a president's ability to bring together 30, 40, 50, 60,000 people to hear his message, which often, you know, was pretty much the same thing time after time. It wasn't terribly different. In fact, he ended it with the same themes, but he was able to bring voice to the voiceless. And that will be, I think, the biggest legacy that he's going to have as he prepares. This will be the first time I'm saying it publicly, well, I guess the first or second, as he prepares to exit office with boxes at the White House. And we apparently are going to move forward with all the question marks on what the actual realities of this election were.
Well, we're going to have to, there's going to have to be a lot of soul searching, very much so in this country and certainly in the Republican Party, for sure. And it's going to have to be a lot of soul searching. And, you know, you're right with what you say about how the left, but basically when you seize power, that there's a lot that they will be up to, and much of it will be no good. And keeping the pressure on, keeping the heat on the left in that way through whatever Biden's going to do. And I think a lot of people are going to be really interested to see how Biden is even going to be able to, because he has not been able to put one foot in front of the other in any successful manner throughout the entire, for quite some time, actually, certainly through the whole campaign. But he's been ineffective in so many ways. And how does that work now? And how sick or well is he? And how does that play out to this Kamala Harris business and the rest of it? And I think everybody is waiting. And that leaves a lot of uncertainty here. People are very uncomfortable with what's going to take place next, Michael. And to the point now that I want to tell you, listen to this here. And I don't know if you all heard this out there, but this is accurate what I'm going to say to you here. Freshman Republican Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene. She's a Republican out of Georgia. She's just announced, just a couple of days ago here, by the way, She's introducing articles of impeachment. I've heard her speak about this, in fact, against Joe Biden. And she's going to do this on January 21st over his abuse of power. And she says Biden's son, Hunter, is currently under investigation over the criminal contents contained on his laptop computer that was turned over to the federal investigators. And for mainstream Americans, it will be the first time they've ever heard about Joe and Hunter Biden and their deals with China or Ukraine. That's her talking now. And what she's saying there is because none of that information came through in the media. It was all silenced and censored. So they never heard anything about Hunter Biden and Joe's shenanigans with China and the Ukraine and Russia and all the dirty business he was up to. That's quite something and pretty brazen of this freshman Republican to put articles of impeachment out there, Michael. I mean, it's more, it's not going to go anywhere, but it is kind of a point and moment, though, isn't it? I mean, principle driven, I guess.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're entering an age where impeachment is being used kind of like it's used in some other countries, with some other Western democracies. It used to be that the high crimes and misdemeanor, the actual constitutional language associated with this, which has its traditions in the UK. And, while it's vaguely worded, there's been a lot written on it. There's reference to it in the Federalist Papers and other founding documents, had real meaning. And the real suggestion was, in the risk of describing it too vaguely, was that this was serious crime, serious conscious malicious activities. Now, that didn't apply in Ukraine impeachment against Trump, which was utterly baseless, just an avenue of distraction politically. It didn't arise, obviously, in this speech either, where the president talked about peaceful and patriotic opposition, and immediately, as he saw the violence unfold, tweeted and got and communicated by video, did everything that he was available to him to communicate to stop. And as I'm mentioning that, I'm referencing the fact that the president's, at least in Trump's case, own ability to communicate with people was severely limited. Couldn't rely on the White House press corps. Couldn't rely ultimately on social media either, which closed his accounts. I mean, it's the absurdity of these media outlets that really have defined themselves as being determining of which presidents can communicate to the people and what messages can and cannot be communicated. And that's the big difference. You described Biden as ineffective. And I guess I would push back on that and say, by what metric has he been ineffective? He's going to be sworn in as president. Trump, for all of the passion and support that he brought, for all the accomplishments too that he had in the first 3 years, which are undeniable, is going to be departing. And there's no more reference to the stop winning rhetoric. Trump will leave a loser in the ultimate question of whether or not the American people supported 4 more years of what he had to offer. Now, I contend, and I think contended that the issues in this election were severe, but we were unsuccessful in convincing even our own side to take it seriously. That's the saddening reality that we need to conclude. And I keep using that phrase leadership crisis, but it's what we confront. You can't go forward with leaders whose sole objective is just maintaining their positional authority. If they're not there for the purposes of advancing the interests of the American people and defending the institutions like representative democracy on which the country's founded, what are they up to, really? And in this case, let's face it, we didn't have Mitch McConnell on our side on this. In fact, he echoed the other message. Right. He said Biden won convincingly. I don't know what information he's looking at.
Right.
And Kevin McCarthy, he's got a great smile, right? But where was he on this fight? Seriously, was he saying, hey, look, I'm alarmed to look at these abuses? And here, at some plan, any plan to address them. No, he quickly kind of backed off the issue. You look at all the major well-funded institutions in Washington, none of them had much to say.
Yeah.
And, I think you got to look at that and say, when the battles come, who precisely is it on our side that the tens of millions of Americans who are associated with this ideology, this movement, can rely on? I mean, I'm asking you seriously as a question. What do you think?
Well, I think that's something we're going to talk about in the next segment, because that's going to be about what the growth of the Republican Party. And as you point out right now, the Republican Party is void of leadership for sure. And when you speak about people like McCarthy and McConnell and so many others, they're establishment players. That's going to be one of the questions we'll have to talk about on the other side here, is how do we bridge the gap with establishment players in a party that is hurting badly to get its message out to the reality of trying to, keep the party together with some sort of glue or something, because there are so many people right now, and they've come and they're handling it all wrong, the way they're kicking Trump when he's down and kicking actually the party, the movement, because that took over the Republican Party and took the oxygen out of the room. The Trumpism, the MAGA movement, that's what resurrected the Republican message, because it was dead as an old white man's party. Prior to Trump, he breathed fresh air into it by welcoming and attracting women and Black American, Hispanic American, and many others, and built those bridges. And so that's part of what we'll need to talk about ahead. I think the disconnect is plenty. I think the Biden, not to be confused and to clear that one point up, the Biden cabal, Michael, in the campaign was very successful. That's why Biden is president, not because Biden did anything great. So he was ineffective as a communicator, for sure. That was the point. But the cabal around him and the campaign people, they were brilliant. Absolutely freaking brilliant. Why? Why did it work? Why were they brilliant? Well, I'll tell you why. Because the mass media and the entire big tech operation, we've seen that now. It is sick what's going on in this country with big tech and Google and all of this here and the onslaught here. That's the problem. And that's why the messaging never got right. And because you have the power, you have a consolidation of power here to the likes we've never seen in our nation. And that's the taking over right now of what's happening. Listen, this is something that's really serious. So anyways, we're going to talk next about, this is important, what I want to talk about next constructively with Michael in the program and with you all out there, is about the Republican Party. Because, as it was pointed out up front of the program from several of our guests, and the one who made the point, one of the driving mechanisms was somebody who was born in Venezuela, who's seen socialism take over. And that was Debbie D'Souza, who we talked to in the first hour of the program. Maybe she was born in Venezuela. She understands socialism. And she's seeing the same things happen here that happened in Venezuela. I mean, she spelled out all that out of the first hour viewpoint. If you missed it, you go back and listen. But that's what happened there. And so now here we are, and we got the same telltale signs. And she said to me, Malcolm, you can't divide the Republican Party apart. You can't create all these other parties. You can't, because that's what they did in Venezuela. And they were successful, and they never regained power again. We're going to have to unite behind some things. The Republican parties and Americans in general are going to have to come together. If we don't begin to come together, the event you've seen on January 6th will become all too normal in our country. And you're going to see more unrest and more problems, because there are a lot of people who are not going to lie down when your First Amendment and your Second Amendment are under arrest. I mean, they are in a dire position right now in this country. And that's a fact. That's not gossip. It's gospel. That's the difference between those two. So one of the pieces I want to share with you as we go to pause here is this shoptotheright.com is something I've been telling you about out there, my fellow Americans. And basically, it's real simple. Don't need to complicate it. It's a group of patriots. A lot of you out there are going to feel this now, because you're going to want to do something back. And that's what these guys wanted to do. It's a group of patriots out of the Pennsylvania area. They got together, created a massive platform, a beautiful program project here, shoptotheright.com. And what it is, it's a nationwide database. So, Michael, the whole concept of this was to unite people with the idea that you know who you're doing business with, so you don't support those companies that have foreign influence with our adversaries like China, or with Marxist groups like BLM or Antifa here. And you know who you're spending money with, because I got to tell you, it's a shocker. It's a shocker when you realize some of the people who you think are friendly to your way of life, and yet they're tearing us apart at the moment. And they're the cause and the reason why we're having the problems. if you as an organizer, Michael, as a Tea Party guy, isn't that going to be the crux of this thing moving forward, where we have these sort of grassroots movements and we're able to connect the dots? Isn't that going to be important here?
Hugely important. I think the ability to bring people together and keep them united, which is a complicated undertaking that requires some approaches we haven't been very good at, will be the key. And there's definitely, as you point out, a strong commercial component to this, because that's what the left has been able to do. Is they didn't just ever view this as a political undertaking. It was a cultural undertaking. It was a commercial undertaking. It was an educational undertaking. It comprised all components of our society. And we didn't rise to the moment. Those institutions are now pretty much fully in their hands. And we've got to decide what to do next. And that's been one recurring message of mine that you've heard repeatedly, is that it's bigger than any one singular individual. We just proved it's bigger than Donald Trump, right?
That's right.
I mean, that's got to be one of the takeaways, because, you know, I don't doubt the seriousness that he brought to any of this, or the commitment he had to it. But it takes a really united movement of people.
If you have a business, you're an entrepreneur, you know somebody who has a business or an entrepreneur of any kind. I mean, this is the way even small business, entrepreneurial in nature, the heartbeat of America, which has been decimated through COVID and through far left policies. Any of those, yeah. You're free listing. The listing is free on Shop to the Right. So you can list your business there. And for the rest of us who are looking to, you know, do business with people, we prefer to do business with patriots and people who love America. Come on now. You all agree with me there? I mean, come on. You don't want to give it to people who don't have our best interest, who are selling us out. That's BS. And so there, we got to use shoptotheright.com as a mechanism to, you just go there. You can do it by category. You can do it by geography. And you can find like-minded and people that are in business for all kinds of things. I mean, pest control, lawn, big services, everything's on there. Check it out, shoptotheright.com. And we're going to be hearing a lot more about this group. And I'm happy to introduce you to them now and happy to get the information out there. Well, listen, Michael and I are going to pause just a moment. And we're going to talk more about the big picture now, and about the Republican Party and the future of this state of affairs. We'll be back with more Viewpoint in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Well, my fellow Americans, how did you feel watching footage on the news of domestic terrorists looting our stores and burning our cities down? You were probably disgusted and angry as much as I was. It's disturbing what's going on. Well, you'd be shocked to know that your shopping habits are supporting these extremists. Companies like Amazon, Nike, Disney, FedEx, it's an endless list. And they've been supporting these radical groups. Let's stop supporting companies that fund these extremist groups. We can all do our part. Visit shoptotheright.com and you'll find businesses in a nationwide database and companies that are aligned with our American values. Visit shoptotheright.com and let's all make a difference. My fellow Americans, our mission here at AmericaOutloud.com is clear. We're here to defend our founding values and principles at a moment when they are under unprecedented assault. And to cover the news objectively and offer intelligent commentary on the challenges we face as a nation. You can tune in and join our family of listeners 24/7 in this vital crusade. Our apps are on Apple, Android, or Alexa. Find us on iHeartRadio or our world-class media player. It is a fight for the soul of humanity. America Out Loud Talk Radio is the voice of liberty and justice for all. So we dial it back here. You got to remember, the Republican Party was founded in March 1854. Of course, the oldest political party in the country is the Democrat Party, for sure. You know, at one time I did a program on this last week. It initially was the Democratic Republican Party. Hard to believe you'd take both of those doses in one, but that's kind of bringing it back a few years. But anyways, it was founded in March 1854, and this all came with the era of Abraham Lincoln, of course, our 16th president, and historic in nature, what he did with the country, and banning slavery and the Republican Party that stood tall for Black America. And so there was the roots and the origins of the Republican Party, which replaced the Whig Party, which was prior to that. It's interesting historically when you look at the political affiliations in our country. And I've really spent some time digging back in our history to see our, kind of our makings and where we started this thing from and what we look like today. It's an interesting deal to go look at that. I encourage you all to do that and leave you. Again, got to understand the past to be able to get to the future historically. So, Michael, we're talking now about the Republican Party in the bigger picture. And part of the challenge, well, let me tell you this. I've seen multiple social media influencers. Now, when I say influencers, these are people who spend a lot of time on social media, which I don't have to spend. So, these are people who have a lot of followers because they spend lots of time on there. And here's some of the messages they put out there, Michael. And this is part of the challenge of what we're going to have to deal with ahead. They say, are you one of the 80 million planning to leave the Republican Party? Now, I seen that message from a good handful of different people, and I jotted it down every time I seen it because they were trying to rally the troops. And then there's been a lot of notices to start the Patriot Party, and they want to use the lion as a Trump sort of thing. But this, are you one of the 80 million planning to leave the Republican Party? So as it was talked about early in the first hour with Dinesh and actually also Daniel and others, it was like, that's a fraction of the party that will kill us. And it's a recipe to death. And it really got my attention, Michael, because they pointed out exactly what happened in Venezuela, which at one time was in a position to be, a force. And of course, it was taken down by the control of one political party through Chavez in the day. And that, oh my God, she brought up the Smartmatic machines, that's where that all came from, the Venezuela. But staying on course here to this, what is your take of that when they talk about leaving the Republican Party? Let's start there. Now, how do we embrace this party that is sort of, and many people would feel, that has screwed us over? How do we do it?
This has got to be the most thoughtless initiative that I think I've ever encountered. It's not the first time it arose. When we launched the Tea Party movement, I heard it repeatedly, I guess, just because party was part of it, of whether we would in fact register as a political party. I said, that would be suicidal. I mean, we can barely and are not, in fact, prevailing with one right of center political party in this country. You move those into two, you just simply divide that vote into two and you're going to lose repeatedly. And I think I mentioned to you, even if you go back in the 2020 presidential race and take that libertarian candidate out, if you had assigned those votes to Trump, which is reasonable because I don't think a libertarian is going to vote for a Biden who promises tax increases on day one, Trump would have won a number of those states. Now, if the election's not straight up, it almost doesn't matter because they'll just adjust the fraudulent votes.
Exactly. But thank you for saying that, Your Honor. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. So I have to say it's not a point of principle, but not a pragmatic point.
It's a good point.
But you raised so the Republican Party in at least since the 90s, Reagan was a defining force in it, did a lot for it. I think revitalized it. Gingrich did his best and made it kind of relevant in a lot of ways, too, with his Contract for America. That's important. But since then, it's sort of lost its steam. And if you say, well, no, look what Trump's done to it. Trump ran in 2015 and 16, in case I need to remind everyone, pretty much against. He ran as the Republican nominee against the Republican establishment. And that messaging was one that people wanted to hear because they felt that this party was becoming too narrow geographically and demographically and didn't have much fight in it. So I am all for, and I believe the cause of the moment is for the 70 million plus to take over the Republican Party, not to view the Republican Party as the opposition. What even is the Republican Party? It's really a class of consultants, political consultants. The ideology that it puts forward or defines is not the primary reason it exists. It's not functioning that way. We just reelected, by the way, the head of the Republican Party with no opposition. I'm curious for these individuals who want to, who think that going out and starting a third party is so easy and winning. You know what would have been much easier? To have run a viable candidate against the head of the Republican Party right now in this recent election. But we didn't hear anything about that. There was no effort to do that. So I think, you know, I'm all for rebranding the Republican Party. You talk about it's the great origins of this party, you know, how it really arose as an opposition force to a thing that was called the Kansas-Nebraska Act, which would have extended slavery into the West. And then Lincoln, of course, embraced it and became the first president to win as a Republican. That's an incredibly solid foundation for a political party, even in 2021, to be able to talk about the origins of it as being the force that put an end to slavery in this country. But we haven't leveraged that history. It's not resonated. It's not known to most Americans. And I think once you get to that point, you raise the question of whether we don't need to simply rebrand this. Patriot Party is a great name. If that's what this is really all about, let's rename the party. But we need to engage ourselves in it and take it over. That is a vastly easier undertaking than starting a third party and then competing with two other major parties that have been around forever and prevailing, which is an incredibly difficult. In fact, I can't name, there's been no history of ever winning a presidential race that way. Yeah. And if you look at the composition of Congress, well, there's a couple of independents in there. There's no history of even winning a congressional race in that with that methodology.
I like what you say there, all of it. When the Tea Party was at its height of glory, and of course, you're a big part of that history with what had happened. I, number one, was a big fan of what was taking place around our country, holding the political elite and the reckless spending that was happening in Washington. And I really thought it was a very noble, patriotic thing, the Tea Party. And I remember the fight that was happening back then. And I remember thinking about what you talked about, actually. So it was interesting to hear you say it, because I was thinking at the time, why doesn't it just become the Tea Party? And because it's a far better brand than these, old party of white men, the Republican GOP, grand old party, lifeless, sort of limpless party that many of us seen it as. And really didn't find that a point of diversity or a point of America anymore, quite frankly. And me as a new guy, is a guy that didn't spend all my life early on worrying about these bozos up in Washington. I started to realize the importance of that as a young man in the advertising business. So I was there, Michael, at that time. I remember what was happening, and you just laid it out perfectly. Now, here's the thing. So I see you as a leader now within that Tea Party segment and say, well, that would be the stupidest thing. It would be like cutting our head off and our tail and going into battle. Why would we do that? But see, the brilliant thing about what we're talking about right now, so it's important we say this now, because Michael just brought it up, and this was in my heart earlier. I've been thinking about this, and you just nailed it. This whole thing about the brand Republican Party. So for everybody out there, all of the MAGA, all of the Trump, all of the conservatives, let me use, there's the word I want, all of the patriots, people who love America, that's the constitutionalists. There's so many cool words to use there, you know, like words that really mean something. That's it. They're not Marxists in nature. They're not communists. They're not socialists. You get it, people? There's like the rest of us, like the majority of the freaking country, rest of us. How about that rest of us? And the rest of you bozos can leave the country, or let's get you the hell out, or give them a state to be named later or something. I don't know. But that's what we're talking about. And then you just say, well, why don't we? Yes, let's rebrand. Now, listen, I've done rebranding all my life. I'm a marketer. I'm an advertising guy. I'm a visionary. That's what I do. I see what other people don't see. I've done that all my life. And you just said it. And I've been thinking about that. How do we tackle this moment, Michael? And part of that key is, let's not separate and fracture and become loose cannons and be stupid about it. This is a real healthy talk we're having now. And I'm excited, because let's embrace. And you just said it. Why don't we get down there and contest when the RNC met and compete to get a better leader in there. But let's take the party over appropriately, people. Let's rebrand it and rename the party. Something more hip that we can all love. Whatever the hell you want to call it. Call it whatever. There's plenty of cool names. But Michael, there's part of the answer right there.
Yeah, every time we get frustrated with the way things are going, we properly take the rage out on the party that we're a part of it. But it apparently never seems to cross the minds of the people on our side that the party we're a part of is whatever we decide it's going to be. Who are the leaders of the Republican Party? What are the policies of the Republican Party? What are the methodologies of the Republican Party? Let me, if those are the questions you're asking, it's whatever we decide they're going to be. Now, in this case, we've, had a class of consultants, as far as I can tell, who they put all over the country to run these campaigns. They're not individuals who operated or worked with grassroots activists. They had very limited ability to do that and very limited interest even in doing that. And ultimately, apparently weren't very good in navigating the operational side of elections either, in the sense that they allowed Democrats and opponents of Trump to get away with all of these procedural violations and outright fraud. I certainly am with anyone who says we can do better than that. But I'm not with anyone who says we need to break completely with this party, because we've not lifted a finger in the Trump era to try to redefine or redesign it, really. And you know, Trump noticed a lot of this too, because there were many campaigns where you had really adamant pro-Trump candidates running against more established Republican figures, and he would kind of peculiarly come out in support of the establishment Republican figure. Some of the very individuals now pondering a second impeachment of him are individuals he endorsed. He never felt, I don't believe, that he had the major amount of support necessary to sustain taking the bold position that it would have logically made sense. So we have momentum. My position is I'm really happy. Fortunate, really, is the better word, because I'd be lying if I said this was some grand strategic plan. When I endorsed Trump on day one, it was a wish and a desire that he would ascend to a leadership position, and maybe some degree of sense that I thought he had a better chance than most people assigned to him. But I certainly never saw it as a foregone conclusion that he would win. But I thought that's the direction we needed to be going in. So a lot of other people ultimately came around to see that as well. That's really positive, and to me suggests that anything we decide we can do together as a movement, we can do. But if we let it to a bunch of individuals, or we let it to institutions behind closed doors to decide our fate, they will decide not just their fate, but your fate as well. You won't be happy with the outcome. You're going to feel powerless and disenfranchised, because you are powerless and disenfranchised. And we're only going to do this if we are united. And all of these efforts that exist need to be driven by that, you know, force. So I think if there's anything positive comes out of this election, it is that fortunately, it was a defining moment. We called it that, really, going into it. If you are following leaders or institutions that didn't speak up on this fraud, don't expect that they're going to turn around and speak up on anything of consequence to you. Because this was all there. The evidence of it is there. Serious people who looked at it found it unbelievably convincing. And the opponents that we faced in trying to make this a centerpiece issue and do something about it were people who simply refused to look at the evidence, right? Meaning you don't have, which would be helpful if I were on the other side of this, I would have taken something like the Navarro report and had the Navarro rebuttal. I would have gone through point by point. You say this, here's the fact, here's the fact, here's the fact. A report like that was never produced, because you can't do it, because you can't deny the factual realities that he pointed out correctly as it relates to this, or as was brought out by the attorney general in Texas who filed the Supreme Court cases. Mm-hmm. Those were all comprehensive and accurate filings of legitimate fraud and wrongdoing. So this is the centerpiece of constitutional democracy in this country. And we just witnessed our party and our movement pretty tepid in being in its address of it. Yeah. And that to me says those are not the individuals to lead us forward in this battle. We've got to unite around individuals who did take it seriously and maybe could have prevailed if the rest of the movement had been forceful on it as well. Ultimately didn't, because they weren't. All the funds, all the organizational structure, all the institutional power on our side was with people who were told to sit down, be quiet, and take it and move on. And that's what we're doing, apparently. Right.
Yeah. Well, some of them.
That's
are.
What's going to happen this week. You will sit down and be quiet. And it's important, honestly. Like everyone on our side really had to take a moment to do that. Sit down, be quiet, watch what's going to transpire, because this is what happens when you put weak individuals at the head of our movement and our party, who have their own personal positional authority as a bigger priority than you and the future of our country. You're not going to hear from them any articulation about why the allegations of fraud and procedural violations were wrong, because they have no argument to make.
Perfectly
and they don't
said.
Choose to make it.
Yeah, perfectly said. That's the voice of Michael Johns there. And wow. You know, what he says there is so profound here. What do we want the Republican Party to be? And again, this could be a rebranding project. I like that concept a lot. Now think about that. Now, that doesn't mean there's not going to be battles ahead. Of course there will be, and within the party for sure. And some of it is very healthy, in fact, indeed, this discussion and debate to bring to a head. But he's so right when he says, and he, you see, that's what it is when you're a visionary and you're able to see things like that. It's like, okay, so we're it. What do we want it to be? And that's where the Republican Party could rally the big part of America, and certainly the forgotten America, which is what Trump was doing, by the way. He did that successfully, crazily successfully. That Navarro report, by the way, you can get the third part of that report is just out, brand new, just been out a couple of days. And you can go to very simply NavarroReport.com, just NavarroReport.com. And it's right. You can actually get all three volumes here. I recommend you take a look at this. It's important that knowledge is power, and you want to study the information so you're empowered. Because again, we still need answers for this. As Michael and I have been talking about in past weeks, it's not going to end because January 20th comes and goes. The truth will need to prevail. And Peter Navarro puts that out there real well. And I did a program that we're going to drive to podcast. It was on talk radio the end of the week there. We'll get it to podcast so you can listen to it on Monday. And this is an important one. We get into all the details and the weeds there on this election and race. Some really startling information. It's entitled "The Future of America's Elections at Stake," says Peter Navarro. And boy, he did a hell of a job on this. So check that out. And we'll have that on podcast right at AmericaOutloud.com. And it's an hour, but you'll get a lot of information and insight on it. So I think we leave you with a lot here. It's been a fascinating day here and a great couple of hours here. And it's so good to have you with us here. We gotta really roll up our sleeves now. And as I told you the other day on Voice of a Nation, my sleeves are pretty well always rolled up. I don't like long sleeves on my wrists there. So they're always rolled up and I'm ready for action. Ready to take it on and help move our country forward and the fight for liberty always. I thank you, my fellow Americans, for being with us on the mission here. It's time to get involved and get loud.